This is Michelle.
And this is Andrea.
And we are Black Girls Vibe. Andrea, it's been a lot going on, man, since we last talked to our crew.
I know. It's been a couple weeks.
It has been. It has been. And guys, we're back and hopefully better than ever. Had to handle some business, namely work matters and important things like that, bill paying. So glad to be back. But let's get on in this into what's been going on.
Yeah, so where shall we start? I guess wrapping up our March Madness, I suppose, would be a good place. Yes,
that's a good place. That's a great place. So congratulations are due to Veronica Gutierrez, who dominated our brackets. Yeah.
Yeah, she did. She did. The rest of us fell very hard and quickly once some of the top teams that we thought would kind of pull it out and win didn't. So
yes.
She rose to the occasion and was our bracket winner. So congratulations, Veronica.
A round of applause to you,
yes,
Veronica.
Yes.
And
yes.
That is an inside joke that is a good segue into our exploits last weekend. We actually had the opportunity to be out in San Francisco and got a little sports action in.
We did.
Yes. So, Andrea, that was my first time at Oracle Park. We went to a Giants game last Friday night.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it was your first time, too. How does it rank of the baseball parks you've been to? Where does it rank for you?
So probably out of the handful or so that I've been, I would say that could be, if not top one, definitely one or two.
Yeah.
Just the venue itself, the location, everything about it. It was just an overall great experience inside of that park. I had a good time just kind of walking around through the pregame tour that we did and learning a little bit of history about the Giants. I don't know. But from a park standpoint, what about you?
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and say looking holistically at my experiences at various parks, I'm going to have to give that like probably the nudge over Wrigley.
Yeah, that says a lot.
It does, but they're so different. The parks are so different, right? So obviously, Wrigley's a bit more old school, and Oracle is just much more. You know, it's much of more of what I would call a modern park,
mm-hmm.
and you can't beat that view of the bay that you have from the stands at Oracle either.
Yeah, I think that's the thing that kind of sealed the deal for me, just kind of ranking it so high, even though first time, it's just the view. It's amazing to have that kind of feel mm-hmm. at a sporting event at the water in that city. It's great.
Yeah, so it seems like the one negative to being up that high, though, is that if you're at a night game, when the wind kicks up and the fog, affectionately known as Carl,
oh, dear Carl.
By folks who live in the Bay, when that rolls through, when those two things roll through, like it's got to be an interesting ride up there in those higher seats. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, I was wondering about that because Carl came through a couple of times while we were at the game.
He did. And, you know, I'm sure he wasn't as dense and as in other games on other days to make, but he did make his presence known and he was there and we could see him. And
we
then
could.
He kind of came and went. So I don't know. But yeah, I could see on foggier days that could be interesting for those who are sitting in different parts of the park and feeling Carl and seeing Carl more visibly than we did.
Right. And we hadn't even touched on those nice seagulls.
Yeah, we don't really have
your favorite.
To. Oh, yeah. So if there is a negative for me, it's the seagulls. I don't do birds at all of any kind.
Of any kind?
So, of any kind.
Okay, got it.
Of any kind. So, yeah, they can, if they would have stayed just kind of hovering over the bay, that's great. But as they start to kind of make their way over the field and over the stands, it's it's not ideal for me.
They're pretty comfortable, clearly. They have a routine that they engage in. So, yeah, we were at a game that the Giants were playing, a night game that they played against the Colorado Rockies, and we left at the end of nine innings, so at the the end of the game, but they were tied 2-2. And it was about, I don't know, was it about 10:30? And after a long travel day and the fun experience at the park, I don't know about you, but I was pretty beat. So we opted to head on back to the hotel. But turns out that game went a whopping 18 innings.
It did.
A whopping 18.
It did. Yeah. Innings. Like, what, 2.5 or so more hours after we left. And a full whole other game.
Right. And because there was a fireworks display already planned, apparently the Giants, upon winning the game at 1:00 in the morning, went ahead and had their fireworks display, much to the dismay of some of the neighbors, the residents in the surrounding neighborhood near Oracle Park. But hey, they pulled out a win at 1:00 in the morning. I understand why they'd be a little jubilant about that and want to celebrate.
Yeah, I would think so. but I wonder how many fans were still left to see the fireworks. But kudos to anybody who stayed to watch that game.
Indeed, indeed. I can't imagine that there were that many. But the bugged out thing is they had another game for like an early afternoon time on Saturday. So they came back to that park just a few hours later.
Right.
They didn't even have the benefit of having a night game on Saturday. They had a day game, so God bless them. God bless them. And thank you to Veronica and Laura for all the great hospitality shown to us at the game last week. And we really feel like, well, I know the experience would not have been the same had it not been for the effort you all made to make it so special. So, you know, thank you guys for that.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, for sure. We got some inside tips on where to sit, where to eat, everything.
We got all the insider information, all of it. So that was pretty dope. The next day, we had the pleasure, is what I would describe it, to go to a Warriors game over at Oracle Arena, because apparently Oracle has purchased all the sponsorship rights, naming rights for all the venues
in
the Bay Area. So Oracle Park on Friday, Oracle Arena on Saturday. That was the most interesting, fun, captivating professional basketball game I've ever been to. And I'm not one to engage in like hyperbole or exaggeration, but I've never seen anything like that. I would just go ahead and put that out there.
Okay. So I know you were there at the beginning. It was their first playoff game.
Yes.
Against the Clippers, home game, obviously, for the Warriors. So you were there at the very beginning and got a lot of the kind of pregame warm-up, that kind of thing. You saw a lot more and kind of got into the energy of it all. So what did you see and experience that kind of put it at that level for you?
So before I even got into the arena, just making, and for those who have not been to Oracle Arena or the Coliseum, they're all right there. If you take BART, you get off at the Coliseum station, and then you have to walk across a crosswalk, and then you have to walk around the Coliseum to get to Oracle. So had to traverse that and got to a point where I wasn't quite sure where to go, and I encountered, I don't know, like an usher on the outside of the stadium who was so nice and so friendly. So off top, like the hospitality was great for me. He couldn't have been nicer. Told me where to go and told me about. And they have like this like what I'm going to call a fan experience opportunity outside of the game. And I've never seen that. You see it at NFL games all the time, like little activations and other activities for people, but for fans. But, you know, they had like activities for the fans outside of an NBA game. I've just never seen it. Maybe, I don't know, maybe you've seen them at Hawks games. I've just never seen that before. So that to me was like a sign, like, okay, this is going to be a different NBA game experience. And you go inside and the DJ is going off. If you're if you are an 80s baby or a 90s baby and you're into R&B and hip hop, like, you are in heaven. One of my favorite songs, like, ever, shortlist ever. Don't at me, don't fight me, whatever, is Parliament Funkadelic's Not Just Knee Deep.
There you go.
And they played that multiple times. I almost lost my mind. Like, it was hard. I just almost lost it. It's like, what? And then I got hungry, and this was like, I guess as you were on your way, I went to get something to eat. They serve, one of the vendors served fried catfish and fries. Like, who does that at an NBA game?
So on the just, West Coast at that.
On the West Coast. It was just so unexpected. But it speaks to, I think, the organizational culture, and that's what they're going for. So that's my spiel on everything I experienced kind of before you got there. What was your experience like once you arrived? And so you didn't miss much of the game either.
No, I think if I remember, it was still in the first quarter. Yep. So I've walked into what's already, you know, the energy's already there because the game is underway. So I walked in and I just, trying to find a seat, just walk into the opening to, you know, talk to the ushers and make sure I'm in the right section, just to stand in the opening and then just look at the sea of yellow, because everybody, they were given a yellow Warriors playoff shirt, which was great. So just to kind of see that, it kind of set the stage for, okay, I see what I'm in store for. Yeah. And then just kind of making my way up to the seat and then turning around to, like, view the full experience from our actual seat was just amazing. And so the energy stayed high the whole game. It was great. And I don't know if it's, I get playoffs. The folks around us, the energy was great. So to me, it didn't matter where you were sitting. Everybody was clearly a fan and rooting for the home team.
Right.
And it was just a great experience from beginning to end.
Couldn't agree more. Yeah, it was a happening. I felt like it was like a scene. Like, okay, so they know something we don't know about here. Like, they've got this game experience piece figured out. You know, I got to say, though, I think part of the energy, I suspect, is due to the fact that these are the last games that'll be played by the Warriors at Oracle. Oracle Arena in Oakland.
Right.
So I imagine there's some nostalgia going on as far as some of the passion that's demonstrated. And I don't know about you, Andrea. I have a hard time imagining that energy is going to be replicated across the Bay. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I don't foresee it either. And it's unfortunate. I mean, I understand, you know, making the move, and we've seen a lot of teams have newer facilities under construction and moving into new stadiums. So I get that that's kind of the trend now. But to have the move from Oakland to San Francisco, even though, you know, distance-wise it is just across the Bay, I just don't see maybe that same type of energy with that same type of crowd in that location. Could be wrong. We'll definitely see when they're in their new home. But yeah, I agree with you, though. I think part of that was just, this is the last games in that arena. But so the fans did not disappoint.
Oh, no, not at all. Not at all. Not at all. So while we're talking about sports teams in California, because it's been about, since we haven't talked on this platform since everything happened with the Los Angeles Lakers and Magic, we got to tee that up.
Yeah.
I'm kind of glad we're doing it now with a little time removed from it, but what are your thoughts on it? What's your perspective?
So Magic clearly made a very, I guess, abrupt announcement that he was departing the Lakers organization and his position, which he's held for, is it 2 years, I believe?
It's 2 years, yes.
2 years. It definitely, the way the news broke, just was shocking. And then just in the manner that he made the announcement was shocking for me. It wasn't really a surprise per se, just because of, you know, we had talked before or when he accepted the position, just how we kind of didn't see the longevity in it and if he would be able to, I guess, really turn the Lakers organization around. Which clearly has not been the case, and not to solely put all of that on Magic, but just some of the decisions that they continue to make as an organization that has not proved fruitful for them. But I think just the shocking part for me was just the manner in which it happened. It was just kind of this low key press conference that was like, yeah, I'm leaving. Thanks. Jeannie doesn't know. And I want to kind of go back to life as Magic business owner and mentor and all these other things that I don't think he felt like he was able to do in quite the same way in this role with the Lakers.
Right. Agreed. I heard a number of people, including Jalen Rose, talk in terms of, you know, Magic didn't like having to be Irvin. Magic wanted to be Magic. And as, you know, as president of basketball operations, that's Irvin all day. Like, there's no room for Magic in that space, which makes sense because Magic has made a career off of being Magic. He's, you know, mm-hmm. he's never really had to be Irvin in that way. If you want to look at it that way, Magic is a great brand ambassador, and he can be a face for a franchise. But the business side of it, that's never been his skill set. And even for, I suspect, even with regard to the movie theaters and the Starbucks, like he wasn't running the day-to-day of those operations. And to the extent that he had an ownership stake with the Dodgers, which I think he had to divest from when he took the role with the Lakers, like, I don't want to just reduce him to a figurehead, but as far as, you know, let me put it this way. None of his previous high visibility business roles involved what was necessary for this particular role with the Lakers.
Right. Yeah, that's fair. I think that's fair.
Nothing that he's done before would have prepared him for it, number one. And then he wasn't so, it'd be different if he didn't know. And we talked about this before. It'd be different if you had him kind of inexperienced in the role, but he had surrounded himself with highly experienced vets in the front office space.
Mm-hmm.
It's the opposite, you know, like I said a couple of weeks ago, can't everybody be new? And, you know, I think he ended up kind of taking himself out of the game, so to speak, because he didn't have a good supporting cast that could shore up where he might have been weak from a business management standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
Which brings me to, you know, the initial conjecture was that he wanted to fire Walton. Jeannie Buss didn't want him to do it, and that's where they got tangled up. I never was sold on that, and it seems like since Walton was dismissed from the team 2 days after Magic left, it seems like his leaving really wasn't the core issue. And if you listen or recall what Magic said, I feel like this is a Rob Pelinka issue, and you and I have discussed that. Like, this is there was some type he made some type of power play that was compelling to Buss, and Magic decided just to take himself out of it. Because he mentioned something about he's just not into the backstabbing and all that, and that was just an interesting way for him to frame whatever's going on. So I hate to see the Lakers go through it.
I know, I do too. It's like, you know, one of the treasured organizations, with all of these kind of superstars and legends who have come through it, they're beloved over the years by decades, you know, no matter if you're in LA or not. And so, yeah, it's unfortunate that they've had this type of change in their front office and with their players. You know, you don't see that a lot of times. Sometimes it's either one or the other. But for them to kind of go through both over the last few years, it is difficult to watch. Right. And then just kind of think and wonder how can they kind of pull this together and get back on track to kind of get back to, you know, the not even the Showtime, but just the where they were with winning, even making it to the playoffs just and having the winning playoffs. Seasons and getting back to the championships.
Baby steps, you know.
Right.
A winning record would be a victory for them next season.
Yeah.
Even absent making the playoffs. What are your thoughts on who they should, or the profile, if you don't have a specific person in mind or candidate in mind, what are your thoughts on the profile of a prospective coach to replace Walton?
So the tricky part with that is it's the Lakers, right?
Right.
And then the other part of it is LeBron is there.
Right.
And so balancing that, mm-hmm. it's got to be, I would think, somebody who is experienced and can manage the limelight of what it comes to be the coach of the Lakers and dealing with the front office, but also really managing LeBron and kind of taking that. And so respect might be too harsh of a word. But you hear a lot of times about how, you know, even when he was with the Cavs, how he was kind of coaching the team, in essence.
Yes.
And so whether that was a respect thing with Coach Lou or even with, you know, Coach Walton, I don't know. That's why I say respect might be a little strong. But almost somebody who, if he's somebody who I guess can be the coach and
sure.
And LeBron be the player and not right. kind of take on both of those roles. So I don't know who that is, but that's kind of, to me, what the need is from a personality, not even the skill set, really. Clearly it's going to be somebody who knows the game, but it's kind of balancing those two things for me. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I think they need to go outside of the Laker family for this hire.
Oh, true. Yeah, I totally agree with that. Yeah.
And so if it's the reports are accurate that Tyronn Lue was speaking with them today about the role, mm-hmm. I don't think that's a good look. I think they need to it is an over devotion to the Lakers family that has them in this mess. You know, like having hired Magic without any meaningful experience doing this job. Having brought on Kobe's former agent, Rob Pelinka, to do a job he's never done before, in a space where, as the reports have indicated, like front offices don't like Rob Pelinka.
Right.
So he doesn't even have the rapport with his colleagues to be able to wheel and deal the way that someone in his role would need to. So I think they need to the extent that their gut is telling them, let's get a member of Laker Nation.
No.
To coach, I do not think that's a good look. I don't think they should hire Tyronn Lue, not just because of his Laker connection, but the last thing I think they need to do is overly capitulate to LeBron right now.
Mm-hmm.
They need someone like a Pat Riley,
mm-hmm.
in my opinion. I mean, who can coach? I mean, not that Riley's leaving the Heat, but who is a bona fide coach who can control and manage LeBron?
Right.
Because to me, of all the coaches that LeBron has had, and no disrespect to Eric Spoelstra, that's so disrespectful. But let's be clear, when he was with the Heat, it was Pat Riley keeping LeBron in check.
Oh, absolutely.
It was
absolutely.
Not Spoelstra.
Yeah.
So you need a Pat Riley influence in the organization if they're not in that coach position.
Mm-hmm.
And it's already confirmed we don't have a Pat Riley in the front office. You know, in my mind, an interesting, I don't know if he'd take it. Well, not from a coaching standpoint, but to replace Magic, if I could hop back to that. From a front office standpoint, Joe Dumars knows how to build a championship team.
True. Very true.
You know. As a president of basketball operations, the Pistons in 2004, I think that was. So you know that's a name that I wish I heard more in terms of the candidate pool for this position. But
mm-hmm.
will the Lakers ever hire a former bad boy Piston? It's a far-fetched dream. I get it. But as far as coaches, I don't really have a specific individual in mind. I do think that the profile should not be someone attached to the Lakers organization or history with the organization, but someone who has a history of being able to manage a player like LeBron. Maybe not necessarily LeBron, but a player of LeBron's ilk.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see Phil, and Phil Jackson obviously gets... He's disqualified because of his connection to the Lakers, but
right. But somebody like that. Somebody like that.
I mean, if Pop would leave in San Antonio, I mean, we know that someone that LeBron respects tremendously, but he's not leaving San Antonio.
No, but that would be interesting. That would be very interesting.
Yeah, and how this impacts their ability to recruit talent, too. I mean, what does your boy Kawhi do now?
Right, because who... yeah, it's like, what's that relationship like? But, I mean, clearly, Pop's got to... I mean, look at the record in San Antonio. With the championships and the players and how long they were able to kind of sustain that type of performance. And so, you know, and looking to transition to some younger players and training them and grooming them. So, I mean, yeah, I don't know if he leaves San Antonio either, but you never know.
You never know. Indeed. Indeed. So I guess we'll continue to keep an eye on what happens out there on the left coast in California with the Lakers. And while they sit at home and watch the Clippers in the playoff, like it's just so, and that's like the increasing trend where the Clippers are performing better these past few years than the Lakers are, which is, it's just such a paradigm shift. It's such a paradigm shift. But as you alluded to, like, you know, the Lakers, they're one of those like glamour squads in the NBA, one of those legacy squads. Like when they do well, the league does well. So,
right. Yeah.
You know, kind of like the Cowboys, which whatever, but, yeah, the league needs the Lakers to do well.
The league needs the Lakers. And, yes.
Check this out. In the same way that, the PGA needs Tiger to do well.
Yeah.
So he did a little something this weekend.
Just a little, no big deal. Just,
just a little, ending of a drought.
Right. Winning the Masters.
Winning the Masters for the first time since 2005.
Yeah.
And winning a major for the first time since 2008.
Right.
Which is tremendous.
At the age of, 43, is he?
He's like a year or two shy of my age. So, yeah, 44, 43.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's quite the comeback. So it'll be, interesting to see how sustainable it is. I'm excited to kind of, keep an eye on it.
I know that they're, same here. It's a lot of talk about, where he goes from here. And is this kind of the beginning of, one of many to get back on track to where he was to break in the records and everything. But I at least hope for him, he's just kind of able to take in this moment for himself. Yeah. And just with everything that he's been through personally and professionally over the last decade, and just, bottle that moment. And just kind of celebrate that victory. And at some point, I don't know. He's extremely competitive. So he's probably already out thinking about the next one. But
sure.
I at least hope he was able to kind of take that in and enjoy that moment for what it was. Because, you're right. The game needs Tiger. I don't know what the ratings were. but I know that they were different this year and higher this year than they were last year. And in previous years when he has not played and been in on the final on that Sunday. So, it was great. It was a great thing to watch.
Absolutely. I think I saw something that said that they were ratings were up maybe 5%.
Okay.
Yeah, as a result of his participation. You know, I was always one of the ones that thought that if Tiger can deal with his stuff, he can come back. But I mm-hmm. never, you know, my thing was, unless and until he deals with his demons and gets his head right, like, he had some, no doubt, some physical challenges. But for me, it was more like working through that emotional piece.
Right.
And as long, and his hair, his head was not going to be clear as long as those things remained unprocessed. Mm-hmm. So I'm hopeful that what this means is that he's doing the work and his head is clearer and he's more focused. And that it, if whatever he's doing, I hope it just continues.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, we need Tiger. Now, I've been torn. You know, there was euphoria that set in Sunday after the win and everything. You know, Tiger, the world has changed a lot since the last time Tiger won a Masters. W was president. Like, we had not had a black president before, you know, and
oh, wow. Last time he won a Masters. That's true. Wow. Yeah.
45 wasn't 45.
True.
45 was his friend that he played golf with.
Yeah.
And who he regards as a friend. I mean, the world has changed a lot since Tiger last won a Masters. And even as happy as I am for his win, he remains politically problematic for me.
Mm-hmm.
And now that he has this platform kind of in restoration, so to speak, it'll be interesting to see what, if any, thing he says regarding the current state of affairs. I do understand that 45 is planning on giving him the, is it the presidential?
I think it's the Medal of Freedom. Mm-hmm.
He announced that either on Sunday or Monday after the win. So yeah, that relationship remains problematic for me. But you know, that having been, putting that aside for a second, I can congratulate Tiger for the tremendous comeback. And we'll see if what he does with this platform. I'm not gonna hold my breath, but we'll see.
We'll just have to watch what happens.
I'm not from here.
I'm not either. So I've just kind of removed that piece from it altogether. I have no expectations. But you know.
So we'll keep an eye out and see what's, do you know what the off top what the next major on the calendar is?
I don't.
I don't even.
No, I don't, unfortunately.
We'll have to get that. Congratulations again, Tiger. Well done.
Yeah.
Way to get it done. So just a couple of things that have just been going on other than the things we've talked about. The Alliance of American Football officially folded earlier this week, declaring bankruptcy. And from what the article I saw, it's no surprise, but they had far many more liabilities than they had assets.
But we talked about this, right? A couple times, in previous episodes. Yeah. And I don't remember where it was at the first point in the season. Maybe it was like after, I don't know, maybe like the second or third game. It was early about the payroll issues. So, I don't know. I have no words.
It's been disappointing to realize that they weren't as together and coordinated as one might have hoped. In order for this to be successful, again, it comes back to that due diligence piece. And to hear like Ebersol saying now, like, oh well, our investors' interests weren't really in alignment with ours. I'm like, how do you get to the point of having them as an investor on that substantial a level without making sure those interests are in alignment?
Right.
Like, it might have been easier if you had let it fold before he came in with the financial windfall.
Exactly.
Right. But so hoping that the players are able to, the displaced players are able to find sources of income, whatever that looks like for them, either on the field or off, but just hopeful that they can land on their feet. And, you know, the same goes for all the folks on staff and the trainers mm-hmm. and front office folks and everything, just hoping that all the displaced employees of the AAF get their footing somewhere. I understand that a number of players are hitching their hopes to the XFL's, I don't know if you want to call it return, but coming next season. So maybe we'll see some of those guys in those games. So we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah.
Other than that, you know, we've got just in general news, like playoffs galore going on between NBA and NHL and Major League Baseball's gotten started up in earnest, and the Tampa Bay Rays are the best team in the MLB right now. So I guess so I'm sure there'll be much to discuss, see if they can stay on top. They've had a good start to the season at 14-5. Got the NFL draft next week. You have any
NFL
thoughts on
just released their play the their season? Schedules yep. for the season yep. so yep. yeah
have you taken a look to see who the Falcons have on the schedule that they should worry about?
I mean, it's the not really not yet. I've seen, you know, it's the typical rivalry games, the Saints and the Panthers. I'm not sure who else is coming or who else they're playing yet. I have not checked, sadly. But yeah, it's the mass release, and it seems like the teams are trying to get creative in how they release the schedules and make it a little more interesting.
That's becoming an event in and of itself, like the release of the schedule. Just remember when they used to post it online and that would be it, but now it's like a TV event. Like it's another way to generate viewer ratings. Like it's crazy. Got the draft next weekend as well, starting next Thursday in Nashville. Any thoughts on who's going to go number one?
There could be a nice quarterback by the name of Kyler Murray.
I think you're right. Yeah. I'm hearing Kyler 1, Nick Bosa 2, and Quinnen Williams, Roll Tide 3.
Okay.
So we'll see how that bears out. I'm sure Black girls Vibe Tribe will be watching and to see who of their favorite collegiate players get called on up to the big league, so to speak. And we'll have our eye on that too. So got one more thing to do today, and that's to honor the women in our Magic Moment segment.
Yeah. So who are we talking about and profiling today?
We're going to profile the women executives who work for the Philadelphia 76ers. They have nine women in high profile roles in their front office, which makes that the most diverse from a gender standpoint, makes them the most diverse front office, probably not only in the NBA, but in probably all the major sports leagues in the country. But are you particularly surprised that an NBA team would have that type of gender composition?
No. If it were going to be any league, I think it would be the NBA. I'm surprised that I wonder what makes the Sixers, like how they're set up to be so progressive. That's interesting to me that it's the Sixers organization, but great. That's great for them that they're kind of setting an example of having that level of diversity at that, at the executive level. Yeah. Hopefully more teams will follow. But no, not that it's the NBA. No, not at all.
And thanks to Rashida for, posting the article that pointed our attention to it. I suspect, Andrea, that to your question about, what is it about the Sixers? One of the women her name escapes me and I can't find it quickly enough to reference it. But one of the women has worked her way up in the organization since 1996.
Mm-hmm.
And I suspect there's probably some pulling other people along with her. You know, she's in a role and she's probably at the table when it comes to recruiting for key positions. And, you know, it all comes back to having that representation at the decision maker table, right? Like,
Yeah.
That's so key. And I suspect that her having been in the organization for so long, she's probably cultivated and mentored a number of the other women who are in this group with her. I just strongly suspect it.
Yeah. Well, that's good then, because I'm sure it was not an easy path for her. And the fact that she's kind of taken it to reach out, like you said, to mentor some other ladies and bring them through and have them at that position to be able to grow at that level. That's good to hear. We definitely need more of that. So good for her and good for the Sixers. I feel like there's definitely some bias with Rashida posting that being in Philly, but we appreciate the article nonetheless.
There's a little bias. She would not have posted that article for had it been about the Pacers or
no
or the Celtics. But thank you, Rob. We'll take it. However, yeah. you know, rep your team though. There's
exactly.
No shade here at all.
No
shade
not
at all.
At all. No. So it's so, anyway.
Well, guys.